Hey everybody, welcome back to Negro Please Radio. I'm your host, Chris Allen. How's everybody doing? Glad to be back. As usual, off the top, I want to take the time out to thank each and every last one of you for tuning in, downloading, streaming, and now watching on YouTube. Appreciate it. Please, so tell a friend, enemy, coworker, tell somebody about my podcast, okay? I see a nice little uptick in the numbers. I appreciate it. And I got to do better at promoting myself. It's something that I hate doing. It feels so, is self-serving the right word to use? But I hate promoting myself. I don't like it. It feels very, very weird. But if I want to be in this business, if I want to do this, I have to. If I'm being honest, I really have to. But yeah, man, I guess we'll jump right in. It shouldn't be too controversial this week. I'm trying to scale back, man. I'm trying to scale back. This shit's almost over. I can't wait. But I'll start with my milestone. For those who don't know, we have an 8-year-old son. His name is Miles. He just turned. Did I say it? He just turned 8. Yeah. And he's got a loose tooth right now. But all right, let me just do it correctly. So we have an 8-year-old son. His name was Miles. And I like to talk about the different things that he's going through. Sometimes it's big, sometimes it's small, sometimes it's nothing. But I just like to talk about the different things that are going on in his life and, you know, things that we're going through and challenges that we may be facing with him or that he's facing. But right now, everything seems to be pretty good. He's like I said, he has a loose tooth and now he's afraid to eat stuff, but he won't let me pull it. Typical 8-year-old kid stuff. So we're dealing with the loose tooth. He's doing well in school, even though he hates the online thing. But we just got an email a couple of days ago saying that there was a kid at his elementary school who did test positive. So that made us feel good about our decision. Anybody else, though, the kids go, don't think that we think we're better than you. It's just that's the decision we made for ourselves, and we just happen to be in a position where we can afford to do that. And you know, just because she's working from home, I'm home during the day, it works out for us, even though we do feel him being around other kids would be beneficial. That is something that he really, really needs, just like most other kids, but yeah, so we'll see. Maybe the second half of the year, we'll see what happens as the weather gets colder and people get pushed indoors, and the social distancing isn't as easy to do. We'll see what happens with these numbers, but yeah, he's such a smart kid, man. It's just he's teaching himself division. He really wants to do it, and you know we've been through it, but you know he'll show me how he does it in his mind. It makes sense to him, and I let him run with that. Yeah, I go, you know what, that might be a roundabout way to get to the answer, but it works for you. It makes sense to you. You're getting the right answer. Conceptually, it makes sense what you're doing, even though it is very convoluted. It makes sense to him. I let him do that. You know, I always want him to master his own thought processes. You know, and things that he's good at. You know, a lot of people, especially parents, man, we don't do that. It's just like, well, they're not doing it like I did it. Therefore, it's wrong, or it's too cumbersome of a process, or it's too this or too that. I don't, or you just don't like it because it doesn't fit the mold the way you used to do things. And yeah, it's easier when people do shit your way. You know, it's less frustrating. But I let him do that. I try to let him explore. I'll try to let him do his own thing. And I go, okay, cool, man. But this is how they're probably going to teach you. And this is how I learned. You know, I like to give him options. You know, I go, hey, this is how I do it. This is how we learned. But if you got your own process, your own system, you have at it. You know, as he gets older, it'll get streamlined. It'll get quicker. And at the end of the day, who really gives a fuck how you add shit up? Or as long as you get the right answer. You know, I don't, it doesn't matter once you get out of school. It really doesn't. Yeah, he's doing well. He's back on his geometry dash again. He's not as much Mario, but he's just so into this coding thing. I really want to, I really want to help him grow that passion and give him the tools and whatever else he needs to become a coder and a programmer. So we've been trying some different apps and stuff on Apple, the Apple App Store, but he likes that CodeSpark. But man, it's not cheap. So we're just toying around with a bunch of other things, and if we can find something cheaper, we'll do that. But if not, then we'll just have to find a way to figure out how to get CodeSpark to work for us. Even though $50 a month for an app is it's pretty serious for an 8-year-old who's in and out of things so quickly. But I really do want to push him to do the things that he loves, do the things that he really likes and that he's good at. And if that means, yeah, doing that, finding the extra money to spend on that, we got to do it. And that's not like it's a ton of money, but for a kid, he's like, man, $50 a month and you might go a couple of weeks without using it and you might get bored. It's a commitment. So we'll see. But I really want him to have all the tools to succeed and to, like, you know, just nurture all of his desires to be a coder. I know that's his desires. Jesus Christ, that sounded weird, but I do. I really do, man. I really want to, water those seeds for him, man. And, just I want him to have a great, fulfilling life and a career that he loves, man. Because I know what it's like. We can move on, but I know what it's like to have a job that you don't like, that you're not passionate about, that you're okay at, you can get it done, but it does nothing for you. And that's no disrespect to the people I work with or the people who actually enjoyed it. I can't say there were never days where I was like, I don't mind this. There were days where I'm like, hey, for how I'm feeling, for what I'm going through, this job works, because for the most part, the last job I had in the military, it was kind of like, what you had to get done every week, every month. And people just left you alone. And I can do pretty well in those environments when I put my mind to it. But there were many a days. I mean, as an adult, when my boss was like, hey, man, you need to sit the fuck down. You're up and about too much. But it's so funny, man, because I see that in him, just eating like breakfast or whatever meal it is. It's like he just cannot sit still. He's just running around. He'll take a bite of a couple nuggets and then literally go run around downstairs, come back, have a sip of a Capri Sun, run upstairs, jump on the bed, come back downstairs, have some mac and cheese. I mean, I'm kind of the same way, but just the adult version, yeah, man, I just know what it's like to work a job that you don't really find fulfilling or you don't really find a lot of satisfaction in for years. But I had a good time with my last duty station. I met a lot of good people, had a lot of great conversations, and I feel like I did a few good things when it came to work. I learned a lot, but ultimately it really just wasn't my kind of work, man. I mean, if you just want to collect a paycheck and feel safe and comfy, perfect. But I would have done that as a civilian for a couple of years, maybe. And I'm such an impulsive cunt. I could have easily seen myself going, fuck this, and literally just walking out and saying, I'm not coming back here ever again. So I didn't want to do that to myself or my family. And that's why I decided to just not even pursue any other intelligence jobs in the government, man. It's boring to me. But what is not boring is the shit I get to do now. I had a great week. I had a great week. I can't lie. I had a fantastic week, man. First off, I think I already spoke about it, but I went to Rogue Island Comedy Festival with my buddy Alex Castain. We drove up. We listened to a bunch of music. We got to drive by New York City, which is always great. I love that city. We went up, saw a bunch of friends, had some good sets, laughed, came back. And that Wednesday, I had to drive right back up north to Baltimore, where my buddy Umar Khan put on a new show at this place called Whitehall Damn it, it's called Whitehall something. Whitehall, but anyway, it's just called Whitehall something. Oh, Whitehall Mill. Sorry, there you go. Whitehall Mill in a nice neighborhood in Baltimore. It looks like an old mill that they gutted the whole thing and they put in all these little restaurants and eateries and just they have these big halls with chairs and tables and, you know, art and shit hanging from the ceiling and people have little storefronts set up in there. It's really nice. Honestly, this is how I see the future of things going at least for a while. Because I know a lot of people lost their businesses over the last, you know, 8 or 9 months. And let's be honest, man, it might be tough to hear, but a lot of people really weren't in a position business-wise to have their own brick and mortar store anyway. But when things are going well, people who really aren't ready for things, you can just do it. You know, your husband or wife has the money and you got a storefront, you got a brick and mortar location and you're selling used books. And because some of these businesses, I'm like, how the fuck do they stay alive? It's like the rent here has to be thousands of dollars a month, and they sell like 9 t-shirts, 4 pair of jeans, or it's like some old bookstore. It's like there's no way you're pushing that many books out of this place where you can afford $5,000 rent per month, plus whatever else. I mean, you see it everywhere. You see it here. You see it in New York City. It's like, how the fuck is this? Antique lamp store right here in Brooklyn, and you know the rent is tens of thousands of dollars a month. I don't get it, but I feel like COVID, this whole thing kind of exposed that, and unfortunately people are losing their businesses. But I feel like places like Whitehall Mill are the future, at least for the time being, where you have a huge space. And they basically have like almost like apartment units, but it's for restaurants where like they have the little window. They got the cash register, the front counter. They got the menu board up there, and it's an empty space. You know, you can come in, you can bring your own signage, you can fill out the menu up there. They have a kitchen back there, and that way you're just renting out a space, and you can move around, and you don't have to worry about paying all these other bills. You know, I saw this in Northern Virginia before the pandemic. I forgot the name of the place, but we went and got some, I want to say it was Caribbean food. And it was basically the same setup, nice big open space, a big bar in the middle. And then there were like 3 or 4 restaurant fronts in there. And they just kind of change out every week or every month. And people who make, you know, you make empanadas or tacos or barbecue, whatever it is, you don't have to have a brick and mortar place. You just rent out this little workspace for a couple of weeks. And, you know, you build your clientele that way. You move to a different part of town. And, yeah, so it's kind of set up like that. But sorry, that was a pretty long explanation to what that was. But I think it's kind of cool. It's basically just a picture of a food court at a mall. Just imagine a food court at a mall. And, yeah, I think that's what we're going to move to when it comes to like restaurants, I feel. That is weird, but because malls are dying, you know what? Maybe that's what they should do with these malls, because all these stores are closing, at least here, like Gap and fucking Victoria's Secret. It's just like, you know what? Make that the local market. Fuck it. Make it the local market. You got the food court right there. You know, you got the kitchen in there. Have a couple people come in. If you sell soap, if you sell whatever it is. All right. Now you can take over the Build-A-Bear store for the weekend. You can sell your goods there and you move out. Yeah, I think that could work. But so, yeah, Wednesday we go up there. I meet Umar, and he has my man Mark Norman headlining. We were going to do one show with 100 seats, but the people who own the place didn't think it was a good idea with the social distancing. So we ended up doing 2 shows. I want to say one at 7 and 9, and they were both sold out. You know, Mark's doing well. Plus, it's 100 tickets. It's not a lot for him. If that was me, I would be sweating bullets to sell 100 tickets. But yeah, they sell out well. It was weird at first. I felt a little off my game on the first show. I was standing in the back of a truck trailer. But they had it decorated. They had it covered up. We had one of those space heaters up there. And it was cool, man. It was set up in between two of the buildings, so the sound was great. They had wine, and I think they had wine and beer, and I think they had some whiskey or something like that. So people were out there drinking. We sold some shirts after the first show. Second show went well. Didn't get to stay for the whole thing because it's a 3-hour drive from Charlottesville to Baltimore, and I have been doing so much driving over the past week, and I was like, I got to get home. And there's something about just going home and waking up in your own bed the next morning. You know, for a lot of shows, I do decide to stay out of town and just get up early in the morning and go home, which is fine. But when you wake up in the morning, you go, oh, shit, I'm in D.C., I'm in Baltimore, fuck, now I got to drive 2-3 hours home. You know, it's just something about sucking it up, putting on a podcast, putting on an audiobook, going home, and just, you know, you get home late. Yeah, it sucks. You know, you stay up for a little bit because you're wired after a show and a drive, and you go to bed, and there's just something about waking up in your own bed where you go, I'm so glad I came home. So glad I don't have to try to get up extra early to beat traffic, to do this. It's like you're just up and you can just go about your day. And I love that, man. Felt great. So Friday, after those shows, I had a show for the DC Improv at the Tally Ho Theater in Leesburg, Virginia. I like Leesburg. I like Loudoun County. They say it's one of the wealthiest counties in the country. It's beautiful homes out there. There's rolling hills. They got horses, and it's old-timey looking. But this show was one of the best shows I've had in a long time. I mean, even before COVID, man, it was just a fantastic show. It's one of those shows where, like, they really treat you like a professional. You know, they got a nice green room set up. They had food for us. And it's something about just performing in really nice spaces. You know, the sound is great. The venue is nice. It makes you feel more important and bigger than you are. It gives you more confidence. So you go out there with a better attitude. And that's what happened for me, man. I can't lie. I had one of the best sets I've had in a long time. I had just got a brand new batch of t-shirts in, and man, all I will say is Leesburg showed your boy a lot of love after the show. They bought a ton of merch for me, and for me, I mean, I don't like talking money. Fuck it. You know, who cares, man? This is, on a good weekend, I can sell anywhere between $600 to $800 in t-shirts. And that's, for me, that's great. You know, my goal is to always make more in t-shirts than I do from the check, comedy check. So, and it works out, I would say, 90% of the time. And last week in Leesburg, man, I sold over $400 in shirts. I mean, that's a one-nighter, man. And the whole weekend, I mean, I'm talking 5 shows here, I would sell about $600 to $800. And for me to sell over $400 in shirts on one show, man, it made me feel good, man. I had people saying, hey, we really connected with the material. We like the stuff about your anxiety, the stuff about your son. It was a great night. You know, I kind of let my guard down. I spoke more about how I felt about my anxiety and my just the bad thoughts I have about, you know, dying and all this kind of stuff and raising my son. And people were really into it. And they let me know after the show, whether through a compliment or just saying, hey, man, I really like that, or buying a shirt. So I want to thank everybody out there in Leesburg that came out to the show. I hope they enjoyed it. I got to meet some fans, if you will. I believe their name is Bianca and Adam. They're actually Norman's fans, but, you know, they like me too. They saw us in Arlington a couple weeks before. And it's just nice to see people coming out and actually appreciating the things that you're doing. So shout out to them for talking to me after the show, buying shirts, hanging out. It means a lot, you know. It lets me know that I need to keep doing this and to stick with it. And there are people who are watching. And so Saturday, it all comes to a head. The week before I went to Rogue Island, I got a text from the GM at the DC Improv. It was like, hey, are you doing anything October 17th? I was like, nope. He was like, keep it open. I might need you to open for Dave Attell and Big J. And I'm like, holy shit, Dave Attell, I'm in. And so I finally get the call. It's confirmed. I get there, and we're doing an outdoor drive-in theater. I get there. It's I had never even been to RFK. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I pull up. It's like this old rusting stadium. And I was like, is this it? And they go, oh, no, it's over here. So we have to drive around the building, and it's like this big parking lot where they do these drive-in movies. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. This is better, I guess. But, you know, they had porta potties out there. It was fun, man. It felt more like it felt more like a festival than it did like a show. But Dave and Big J, they show up. You know, I work with Jay a couple of times. We've hung out in New York, so you know it's cool that he remembers and recognizes me. So we chit chatted and we caught up, and I get to meet Attell. We're out there, we're having a cigarette. He's talking about what it's like in New York and how he's never done a show like this before, and it's definitely top five of his most odd shows he's ever done in his career. And he's such a legend. Anybody in New York would say that Dave Attell is the king. He was so nice. He was so humble. The guy never complained. It was pretty cold out there. Not the most ideal circumstances with cars honking and stuff. And, you know, you don't really get to see much of an audience. And it can be tough to do. But, man, that guy, he's been doing comedy, probably over 30 years. The guy didn't complain once. He's pouring over his notes. I mean, he's looking at notes. Notes. Dave Attell. And there's people that I know that like refuse to do outdoor shows, Zoom shows. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. They're waiting for things to get back to normal. And it's like, it's just crazy. You got a guy who has accomplished all these things, and he's just wanting to get on stage. Just wanting to get on stage. He just wants to perform. It just showed me, like, if you want to be great, man, you can't have an ego. You got to let that shit go. You got to take what you got. Attell doesn't need that show. Big J doesn't need that show. But they love comedy. They love the fact that people want to see them, and they came out and they did the show. They killed. It was fun. And it was a huge moment for me, man. And it was nice to share with another fellow DC comic, Denise Taylor. Very funny. We had a great time. I finally got to meet Ian Fidance, is another New York comic. Very funny dude. And it was a moment. And plus, you get to share this kind of weird moment with a legend. You know, it's just like, hopefully if things are still intact and we don't fucking rip our country apart over this goddamn election, it will be something cool, you know, in 5 years ago. Oh man, yeah, remember the pandemic? Yeah, I did a show with Attell, man. We were outside, we had to wear a mask, we had to clean the microphones off. It's just I know it will end up being a great story. You know, it'll end up being a great story. And I also think back to when I was a super, super new comic, and I would in Dayton, Ohio, hanging out with my buddies like John Craig and Adrian Cosby and Doug Morgan and all those guys, Nate Washington, just sitting there talking comedy, talking about ONA, just New York comedy, talking about The Cellar and The Comedy Store and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, of course, you know, Dave Attell names comes up all the time, Patrice O'Neill, and just to sit and talk with those guys about that years ago, to watch all the YouTube clips and hear all these stories about guys like Attell and Chappelle and, you know, watching guys like Big J and have their careers take off and go, man, and to finally get to work with them years later, it's surreal. And I'm very fortunate. And whenever I'm in a situation like that, I always think about my buddies back in Ohio, man. I think about, like, all the stuff we used to talk about and all the dreams and aspirations we had. And like, I've had a couple of instances in my career so far where I've been able to rub shoulders with a lot of the guys and comics that we loved, that we looked up to and talked about. And it feels good, you know, to get a chance to get a glimpse of what it's like to be in those circles and to have conversations with guys we watched on TV for years, on YouTube for years, watching their specials. And I'm very thankful to Antoine and Allison and the DC Improv for letting me do something like that. It really meant a lot, and I appreciate all the text messages, all the inbox messages and the comments and the likes and stuff like that. I really appreciate everybody encouraging me to keep pushing, telling me that I'm on my way, that I'm doing well. I appreciate that. I know I got a long way to go. I just got to keep writing. I got to get involved in some more projects. There's a lot I have to do, but it does feel good, and I really appreciate it. And it's very, very motivating to get to rub shoulders with these guys, to work with them and to pick their brain. But all right, so there's a show. That's a show. This went very long. My apologies. And follow me on Instagram and Twitter @ChrisAllenComedy. I'm out. Peace.